Welcome to Local Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. Thank you for listening in. I'm your host for today, Susan Franzen, missing my usual co-host Paul Wearson, whose cold has gotten worse so he can't leave the house. He assured me he would be listening, but he won't be here to interview our three live guests. But Cynthia McClure is here to keep our spirits up and to make sure our listeners know why we love KHOI. One of the things we're proud of is our monthly guests. Leanne Harder, Story County Outreach and Special Projects Coordinator, comes over from Nevada on the second Wednesday of each month to make sure that we are aware of deadlines we need to watch, as well as for important business of the Story County supervisors. Welcome, Leanne.
Good morning.
Paul was really disappointed he'd miss interviewing you this month. That you're his star, really.
Well, if Paul is listening, I hope you will start feeling better, and I guarantee you will be crying by the end of my segment. It's kind of a standing joke. Paul always wants, always says I bring him to tears. I'm usually talking about taxes at that point, which I won't be today.
Okay. So what will you be talking about?
Well, let's start out with a reminder from the Story County Recorder's Office. Stacy Herridge, County Recorder, would like to remind everyone that the ATV, ORM, and ORV and snowmobile registrations are due by December 31st at the end of the year. Renewals after that incur a $5 penalty per vehicle, which if you have several of those could add up. In addition to that registration, all snowmobiles operated on public land must display a separate user permit, and you can get that permit as well as take care of your registrations at the Story County Recorder's Office in Nevada. They are open Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Then from Story County Emergency Management, and I'm going to continue saying this every month like a broken record until we get everyone in this county registered for Story County Iowa alerts. We can have a large anhydrous ammonia leak coming, a large cloud of chemicals across the community. You have boil warnings when water mains are broken. These events always happen in Story County, and emergency responders use the mass notification system called Story County Iowa Alerts. It's a way that we can get urgent information for emergencies out to residents. We need everyone to register to make sure you get those messages. You can register for the community in which you live, the community in which you work, the community in which your mother lives, where your kids go to school, so you know what's happening all around you in Story County. You go to sign up at www.storycountyiowa.gov/alert. Again, it's an ability to get to know what's happening throughout Story County and really stay connected if and when these emergencies happen. Then from the Story County Treasurer's Office, they are again working with Story County Veterans Affairs on the annual Veterans Home Supply Drive. People can drop off items at the Treasurer's Office, which is at 906 Street in Nevada, at the Administration Building, or at the HSC, which is Human Services Center Building here in Ames. The list of desired items is pretty lengthy, but I'm going to just highlight a few things. For personal care and hygiene items, they don't want travel or sample sizes, but everything from shampoo, conditioner, men's and women's body wash, hair products, toothpaste and toothbrushes. Then snack items include candy bars, individually wrapped snacks such as chips, cookies, and Little Debbie-type snacks, and microwave popcorn. I think that's always a big hit. Clothes, and they can only be new items, but long-sleeved undershirts, sweatpants and sweatshirts, both men's and women's, and, of course, socks. And socks are always a need. You hear that quite often. Craft items, some solid color fabric, model car kits, I think that's awesome, and paint or color by numbers. And then recreational items, the forever postage stamps, large print playing cards, adult coloring books, puzzles, but they have to be 500 pieces or less, some bird seed, and then crosswords, jumbles, word searches, or sudoku. I can never say that. Sudoku books. Can't play it either. I can't do it either. So,
It's so, Sudoku.
Sudoku. Okay. Sounds good. Thank you. I still can't do it.
I'm married to an addict.
So if you have any of these items that you want to donate, bring them to the Treasurer's Office at 900 6th Street in Nevada, or again, the Human Services Center in Ames. Also, a little note about vehicle registration renewal notices. When the Iowa Department of Transportation sent out registration renewal notices with vehicle owners for those vehicles that expire in December, there were some errors. Some vehicle owners with multiple cars may have received a notice that did not include all the vehicles that need to be renewed. The DOT found the problem, and they'll resend renewal notices again to all the property owners that, or all the vehicle owners affected. If you've already received your registration notice and it was an error, disregard it, and you'll get a new one. If you have any questions, contact the DOT or the county treasurer. I've been saying this for a couple months as well, and it's here finally. It's pretty exciting. Friday, November 15th, from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. is the Story County Supermarket of Veterans Benefits. It'll be held at the Plex, which is at 5501 George Washington Carver, just northwest part of Ames. Donuts and coffee in the morning, haircuts available all day. I'll be there to talk about the Home-Based Iowa program that we have in Story County. You can call Brett McLean at 515-956-2626 with any questions. Switching gears a little bit, I do need to share that FEMA, Federal Emergency Management Agency, has initiated a 90-day appeal period for the new floodplain maps and studies for unincorporated areas of Story County. So all those areas outside the cities within Story County. We did get official notice that we're right now in this 90-day appeal period for the proposed new maps. If anyone has any questions, I encourage them to contact me. I'm at 515-382-7247. My email is lharter, so LHARTER, at storycountyiowa.com. FEMA has a specific basis for an appeal of the new maps. So if anyone has property that's being affected by the new floodplain maps, it has to meet all scientific evidence. There's a large amount of criteria that need to be met. They have to be done in writing. There's a whole set of I's to dot and T's to cross. So let me know. Reach out to me. We are taking information from property owners prior to Monday, December 9th, so that we may turn around and get back to FEMA in time. If you do want to look at the criteria to file an appeal, you can go to www.floodmaps.fema.gov, and then there'll be some information on appealing flood insurance rate maps. I do need to point out that Story County offices will be closed for Thanksgiving as well as the day after Thanksgiving. So keep that in mind if you have business that you need to do at county facilities. And then how to reach us, sign up for Notify Me, go to our website. If you're on social media, don't miss out on what's happening. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter and also Instagram. Instagram is story_county85. And also subscribe to our YouTube channel at Story County, Iowa. And then again, my email is lharter@storycountyiowa.gov. My phone number is 515-382-7247. And our website is www.storycountyiowa.gov. Thank you.
See you next month. In case you just tuned in, this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, Story City, Ames, and the surrounding area. You've been listening to Leanne Harder with a monthly Story County Report. We have three very different guests for the rest of the show. First, we'll continue with some of the history of the Masonic Lodge, talking more about some of the principles that it made it important in the development in the United States. Bill Youngklass is with us again to continue our discussion that was interrupted on the 4th of November. Then we'll hear about two events taking place later this week. Michaela Thompson will give us a preview of tonight's Pantorium session, and Mara Spooner will tell us about the benefit shopping night at Worldly Goods from 4 to 7 p.m. this evening. Welcome, Bill.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, we're glad to have you. We're here with us again. In our discussion after the presentation you made on the 4th, I realized that there were some aspects of the Masonic Lodge that sets it apart from other fraternal organizations. What do you call fraternal organizations when they have women in them, too?
They would be, I guess, co-educational, co-ed.
Co-ed fraternal organizations.
Right, right.
But I'm just curious, does the Masons now admit women?
No, we're a male organization, and there are affiliated organizations, though, with Masonry that do have women in them. For instance, Eastern Star is probably the best known. Also, there's Amaranth, White Shrine of Jerusalem, Order of Beausant. All those are organizations related to Masonry that have women in them. But Freemasonry, sometimes called Ancient Free and Accepted Masons, you'll see those letters AF and AM, is a men's organization only, in the United States at least.
And I guess it has a long history in Europe, which is very complicated. So let's get started.
Okay.
You did, I believe, even the proclamation that was read by the mayor mentioned that George Washington and Benjamin Franklin were Masons. And I guess he may mention even some of the others, Paul Revere and Patrick
and
Henry.
13 other presidents as well as George Washington.
Yeah.
Yes.
But it's the principles that I think are important that I thought that we'd like to talk about today.
Okay. Okay. I guess one of the best ways to say it is, in addition to being a fraternity, Masonry is basically a series of moral teachings. And that's what draws us together in lodges as a group of men, is to build character through these moral teachings. The history of that comes out of the old operative Masons, those who actually laid stone and bricks, who had to train apprentices. And these were often young boys, 12, 13 years old, who were apprenticed for about 7 years. And so to teach them, they came up with tools like counting on your fingers and so on to help them learn their tasks. And so they would use the working tools of Masonry to help those young men also build character, because they didn't have public schools, which, by the way, is a big thing with Masonry is our public education system. So they taught the young men by talking about the tools that they use, so that a plumb that they'd use to erect walls, they would use that to have them be upright in their lives as well, or the level that they would lay flat floors and so on. They would talk about that as being on the level with your with your fellow workers, and that's sort of where fellowship comes out of. And then things like the square, you know, being square with your friends and neighbors. It's the right kind of conduct. So the operative Masons use those tools to teach their young apprentices how to become better men as well. And ultimately, supposedly, and there's thousands of books on this, in England at a point probably in the early 1700s, the operative Masons started inviting people outside of the actual workers to join them in discussions, and they became speculative Masons. And so they turned this in then to this series of moral teachings using the operative Masons' tools. Does that sort of get at your question?
Well, yes, and the phrases that you use, on the level. Mm-hmm. And this is not just for Masons. No secrets about that.
right. Yes, and everything that I'll say today, obviously, it should be public information, right?
Well, and also it gives me some idea of why they were so important when they came to America. America mm-hmm. didn't have a lot of the same traditions. And as a matter of fact, many of the towns in New England, their main meeting place and so forth was a church. Which was state-supported mm-hmm. or community, yes,
early
supported
on.
By tax mm-hmm. tax money. Mm-hmm. And that became a controversy when the congregational churches, these were mostly congregational,
right.
I think all congregational, split in their beliefs. Mm-hmm. There were Trinitarians and Unitarians, and
right.
suddenly they had to decide who got the tax money, and that's right. when they said, oh, the churches shouldn't be state-supported.
Right. And that's, again, an important tenet with Masonry, is that the state and the church and the schools be separate entities. And so that's why we support public education, because in those early days it became evident that if democracy was going to work, a system of public education was necessary to bring all these people together of their different backgrounds and get them in a common education basis so that they could support a democracy and understand a democracy and make a democracy work. So public education and democracy go hand in hand.
You talked about that a little last time, but one of the things that interested me was toleration. And the religious toleration, although I guess that they had a little problem with the Catholics that came over from Europe, mm-hmm. but that, I mean, there was a time when there was
tension at some point.
I think more
yes.
than tension. Aside from that issue, I believe that the Masons, on principle, almost from the beginning of the country, were accepting of non-Christian religions as well.
Yes, that is very important to us. Our basic tenet is that you must have a belief in a supreme being, but how you perceive that being is of no concern to your brothers. And so we have then, for instance, in our lodge here in Ames, we have Jewish members, we have Muslim members. So on our altar, we not only have the Christian Bible, but we have the Torah and we have the Quran. And in other parts of the world, of course, Hindus, Buddhists, Confucians are members of Masonry because, again, our concern is you have a belief in a supreme being, and how you perceive that is immaterial, because we try to build character using ideas from all different religions. And so that helps strengthen us. We don't see it as a point of weakness by being diverse. We see it as strengthening this character building by including all different religions and different races. So none of that is important as long as a person has a belief in a supreme being. So an atheist would not be able to be a Mason.
But it seems to me that this actually broadens the community building aspect of that. And we talked a little, we don't have a lot of time left, yeah. about the fraternal aspects, mm-hmm. Why people might have, for fraternal reasons, wanted to form Masonic lodges right. as soon as they got out here to the frontier.
Right. That is interesting, because we talked last time about the fact that Masonry actually formed in Iowa before we were a state. And so why were these guys getting together clear back in 1844 before we became state? Well, as new communities would form, men would want to have a group that they could get together and not have discussions about politics or religion, but get together for fellowship and to build character, make them good, strong citizens. And so as the communities developed across the state, usually following the rail lines where a new community started, before long there would be a Masonic lodge there, so those men could get together and have the strength of working together on things in the community, make the community better by making them better. Does that sort of...
Yes, it certainly does.
Okay.
It certainly does.
Right.
And, of course, there are other organizations that have that fraternal aspect, but Masons was a sort of a blend of character building and fellowship.
Right. And our three tenets are brotherly love, relief, and truth. And the relief part is looking out for other people. And so a true Mason is a man who's willing to make sacrifices of time, money, and opportunity on behalf of humankind. And so, again, that was important in each community, that as a Masonic Lodge form, they'd look out for needs in the community and try to fulfill those needs. Now, Masonry cannot make a man better, but it puts within his grasp, we hope, moral precepts and so on for them to follow to strengthen them. And then again, that should carry over to the community. And so back to your point on why these new communities as the country developed would have Masonic lodges, it just almost seemed like a natural thing to build a strong base of character in the community and strengthen it.
Well, thank you. That's right. I think a summary for those who are maybe put off by the idea of a secret organization.
Right, and we're not secret because we have a big sign on our lodge that shows we're there.
Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome. It's a joy to be a part of this.
Thank you, Bill. That was Bill Youngklass, who is a past master of the Arcadia Lodge number 249, because there were 248 other lodges already here
in Iowa. And, for instance, Nevada was Lodge 99. Boone was Lodge 79. So they were quite a bit ahead of us.
Quite a bit, yes.
Right.
Yes. So thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Bye, Bill.
Bye.
This is time to have a song, right?
Yep. Let's play Help, because right now we are in our pitching kind of thing. We're going to ask and request that you assist us in reaching our goal of $50,000 for KHOI to keep us on the air. Every dollar counts. It is tax deductible. And please remember that at this time, for those hard to buy for people, this is the gift that keeps on giving. That was Help, and you may have noticed that wasn't any of the Beatles. That was Paul Nelson with the Pool Hall Waltz Band. And as you have been reminded several times, Paul Nelson not only was a founder of KHOI and the invaluable
engineer. I don't think anybody's mentioned that he was an engineer in NASA.
Yeah, he was a rocket scientist for what mission? I can't remember that.
I don't know. I think
he helped with the rockets going into space.
Right.
So he was a rocket scientist. And I remember when Tesla was able to take a rocket and land it on a pontoon out in on the water, he was super excited because that was like, that was the dream, is to create usable rockets. But my husband called him a Renaissance man on Monday, but he was. He was a very talented chef and he had a scientific mind and he helped us figure out our tower connection, which was a little tougher than putting IKEA furniture together.
Well, I noticed when I was driving down, I saw on top of the Sheldon Munn a big dish and an antenna. And I thought, is that our antenna?
I'm not sure. See,
I know we do bounce off.
We bounce off
Sheldon,
quite a few.
Sheldon Munn. Okay.
With that said, every dollar that you give us, we actually put to practical use, and it actually matters. So if you could become a member of KHOI, that's only $60 a year, and it'll make a difference. And if you create a sustaining membership, which is basically have a little bit of money taken out every month, it makes sure that we can pay our bills on time, and that's our main goal.
And, of course, we welcome larger sustaining gifts. However, the key really to success is to have a lot of listeners and a lot of listeners who are willing to chip in. So we invite you to join. If you are a member, we thank you and talk it up.
Yeah, well, the big thing is this is a tax-deductible gift, if you want to think about it that way, and it keeps the radio – we try to keep our listeners informed about everything going on in the county. And Susan, you are particularly good at that. You are the roving reporter for KHOI.
Well, yeah, but I also realize that we miss a lot. On the other hand, there are things that people get from KHOI that they really don't get anywhere else, or they don't get it in the same
context. Definitely.
In fact, the day before the election on the 4th of November, we had recordings of all of the candidates.
Mm-hmm.
And several of them thanked me for that service. This was pre-recorded so that we could have, you know, equal time for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And they were well prepared. I mean, they came down and within 2 minutes they had the important things said. But it was really impressive to me how you could really distinguish among the candidates with that concentrated. And
yeah, the sound bites allowed people to kind of figure which ones they preferred.
I don't know how many people said, I don't know who to vote for. You know, who are you voting for? I said, listen to Monday's local talk show.
Yeah. I think we do have an impact, Susan. And, you know, none of this comes free. I mean, everything, you know, if you think we're a good organization and you want to support us, make your dollars count. We squeeze every penny and we keep the lights on. We pay the bills. We just make everything happen. Susan's a volunteer. I'm a volunteer. People come in here and they do this because they love the station and they love radio and they want to make a difference. And there's a lot of programming here you can't hear anywhere else. We do not sound like another station. There are like delays and sometimes snafus, but we make everything count because we are serving our community, and it's a, you know, it's a good thing.
Yes, it is a good thing, and we need to move on to find more good things that KHOI is doing.
Oh, there's the Pantorium sessions.
That's right.
Live music.
That's right. And this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and we were just talking with Bill Youngclass, past master of the Masonic Lodge number 248, which is celebrating its 150th year in Ames. For the rest of the hour, we'll be talking about upcoming events this week. Yesterday, Michaela Thompson came in to introduce herself and invite you to tonight's Pantorium session from 7 to 8 p.m. Actually, she may not need much introduction. She was featured at a Pantorium session a couple of years ago, and she was a guest of Scott Kovic, on Road Trip Iowa, and last week Paul Hertz played one of her songs on Ready, Aims, Fire. And this is one of the important things that I wanted to mention while we're pitching, is KHOI's support for young artists.
Let me play the clip.
Sure.
My name is Michaela Thompson, and I've lived in Ames about 4 years now. I play music in town, that's why we're having this interview. I'm playing Pantorium sessions. I also teach yoga in town, and I am a newly formed barista. I've just learned the skill of being a barista, so that's a little overview.
How long have you been playing music?
Since I was a little girl, I've been singing, and I learned to play piano when I was in about third grade. And then I picked up the guitar, and I've been playing guitar for probably about 5 years.
For the Pantorium session, though, you'll be playing guitar?
Guitar and piano, I believe. I think I'm going to bring my keyboard in, so a couple different instruments.
You're a songwriter.
Yeah.
How did your songs come to you?
Yeah, so when I first started editing music and like layering multiple tracks, like using a simple program like GarageBand or something, that was really inspiring for me, and that really leveled my music up to this totally different level because it was multi-track, multi-instrumental, and I had a lot more creativity of where I wanted the song to go. Because it's like when you press pause on the computer, you can like, you know, slow down time, stop your song in the middle of it, and then change it, rather than if you're playing a song real time, you know, it's like you can't just hit the pause button. I don't know. It was just a different process for me to write a song on the computer, if that makes sense.
So, but you have some recordings then?
Yeah. I have, I put an album out within this last year, and it's just bedroom recordings of, you know, recordings I've made myself. And so nothing fancy, but it's just kind of what I've been working on the last few years here in town.
And do you have any of those that we could listen to?
Yes, I do.
You have them with you?
Not a physical copy, but they're all downloadable off of Bandcamp website, all of the tracks. And so Paul Hertz just played the album actually on his show, I think last Thursday, on Ready, Aims, Fire.
Mm-hmm.
And so he just downloaded them off of the website.
So basically it sounds like you are two kinds of songwriter. You're the songwriter who sings your own songs live for a live audience, and you're the songwriter who puts together different tracks to make a completely different sound.
Yeah, I think those are both two important aspects of being a songwriter. They're just different aspects of it.
Well, not every songwriter does both.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I think that's kind of where the term bedroom artist came from. It's like these people who are just creating multi-tracks in their bedroom and releasing it. And I think that's kind of a term I've learned, is just being a bedroom artist.
And then if you have a band, you have a garage band.
You have a garage band, yeah, exactly. Yeah. But you can definitely be a bedroom artist without being a performing artist. So I guess that's maybe where.
Well, one of the advantages of playing the guitar for a live audience is that you can take it with you anywhere. You can go on a camping trip or a sailboat and bring your guitar, but you can't bring your piano.
No.
And you can't bring your computer.
And that's kind of the reason that I was drawn to learning guitar, because I couldn't keep carrying my keyboard everywhere and loading it in my car.
I'm curious to hear what her music sounds like.
Michaela had her guitar with her at the studio yesterday and sang one song. Here it is. What song are you going to play for us, Michaela?
I am going to play a song I wrote about a year ago. It's called Lucky.
Like tasting rain, so sharp on my tongue, but in my eyes, we'll adjust in time, we'll adjust in time. I'm still so young. is like the sound of ideas as they're bouncing around, tickling my mind as they're playing out, and you're speaking about nothing specific, but I like the way it sounds.
We don't have time today to play any of her multi-track songs, but Paul Hertz tells me you can hear them at bandcamp.com. I'll put the link on our webpage with today's show.
And to get to our webpage, you have to go to khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. We have a donate button there. Keep us on the air. It makes a difference. Every penny counts. I mean, yeah.
But after you have done that, that is at the top of the page. But all of our Local Talk programs are archived so that you can get to them. I mean, if you had a friend who was on 2 years ago, you can navigate our website and there'll be a little picture, sometimes a picture of your friend, sometimes a picture of something totally whatever
yeah,
the show is
depends,
about.
Depends
and
who's
and
on the show.
Description of the show, and you can press a button and you can hear it. And we try to get every one of our current shows up mm-hmm. within 24 hours.
yeah. Conscientious volunteers.
That's right. That's right.
But it does matter because right now we're trying to raise $50,000 to save our station. And I think we're almost halfway there. But it makes a difference. So come into the live Pantorium session at 410 Douglas and watch Michaela play live tonight. And, see what we're about. Become part of this KHOI community radio in the heart of Iowa.
And tomorrow night, we don't have a Pantorium session. We invite you to go shopping because
retail therapy, folks.
Our final guest for today is Mara Spooner, the manager of Worldly Goods. Thanks for coming in, Mara.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I love this show.
And today, and thanks to Worldly Goods for choosing KHOI as one of your benefit shopping nights. So, of course, we want our listeners to know that KHOI volunteers will be providing cookies and other treats for those who come to shop at Worldly Goods from 4 to 7 tomorrow night, Thursday, November 14th. On that night, a portion of the sales will go to KHOI. And this is a very clever device, marketing device. The more that's sold, the higher the percentage. Is that right?
So, that's absolutely correct.
Tell me how that works.
Sure. So benefit shopping nights are a thing Worldly Goods has done for many, many, many years. I've just been with the organization for 2 years, so I'm just continuing this great program that the nonprofit has done for a long time. But so from 4 to 7, anything any item sold, anyone who comes in, not just someone who comes in and says, I would like this to go to KHOI, but anyone who happens to come into Worldly Goods tomorrow night from 4 to 7, a portion of their sales will go directly to your organization. So in that time, if $499.99 or less is sold, you get 10% of those sales. Up to $999.99, you get 15% of those sales. And everything $1,000 or over is 20%.
Wow.
So there's a lot of really beautiful items at Worldly Goods all the time. And we're at a fair trade nonprofit. So fair trade means that all of our things are handmade and they're made in sustainable and fair ways. So they're made generally in developing countries and they're made with practices that help to bolster the cultural identity of the folks who make them. Often they're made by women in those areas. There's never any forced child labor. It's a sweatshop-free environment. So, yes, which is a silent clap across the studio.
Right.
And many of the things, I think all of the things, but they're all very beautiful, right? They're handmade. They're unique items. And they're from all over the world. So you can be sure when you're buying gifts at Worldly Goods that your recipient is probably not receiving them from someone else.
Well, one of the things I like there is they have excellent chocolate, fair trade chocolate, and coffee.
Yes. The fair trade items are generally the most delicious. Before we were on air, we said that social responsibility is a delicious thing. So those items, you know, generally coffee and chocolate, because they're so widely consumed, can be harvested and created in ways that are really detrimental to the people who do the work. And fair trade harvesting is the opposite of that. It does things like bring money into communities and help farmers grow more sustainably. And it's just better. And it's not full of strange things. It's just full of the things that it's supposed to be.
Well, one of the things that I always liked with Worldly Goods items was many of them have little tags that tell what country and sometimes even the name of the person. Is that right?
Yep. Yeah. So all of our items on the little tag that has the price and barcode will have the country of origin listed first. So if it's from Kenya or Indonesia or Russia or Mozambique, any of, you know, we have, I think, over 50 or 60 countries right now. Yeah, that's a project for January, is counting. yes, the country of origin is always listed first, and many of the items are signed by their artists. And if there's ever, you know, sometimes when we get items, they come with stories about the artists or what projects are being supported by the sales of those items. And so it's
like if they had a community school or community water system.
Yep.
I mean, these are practical things.
Absolutely.
Change people's lives.
Yeah, we often talk about how many times the gift can give, right? So it's you're buying it to give as a gift to someone you care about, but that is also giving to our organization as Worldly Goods to keep us going as we have for the last 33 years. On a benefit shopping night, it benefits the community agency we partner with, like tomorrow night with KHOI, but then it also directly benefits the human beings who make the item. And that is the unique benefit that we don't often get to shop with anymore, unless we're buying from our local places, which we should do as well. But if we're buying gifts, unless we're buying them locally made, it's hard, I think, to find that impact where you're impacting the people who do make the product.
Well, I know I purchased some yummy food there.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that is they have hot sauces from South Africa. And if you've never had a South African hot sauce, I mean, the only thing hotter would probably be Sri Lankan. But they're pretty tasty. There's one called Lemon Drops. And
yeah,
it has,
it's lovely.
It has like these gorgeous beads around the top. So even a bottle of hot sauce is decorated. So, you know, the details that go into all this is, you know, very thoughtful. Mm-hmm. And marketing. But, yeah, it's really yummy flavors. So what's your favorite?
Worldly Goods item?
Food-wise.
Oh.
Because they have the dark chocolate-covered raisin thing.
We have some dark chocolate-covered espresso beans that are lovely.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. there's a product I buy often, and it lost my mind when you mentioned the dark chocolate covered espresso beans. we have a lot of really great food items. There are a line of foods that we carry that are not certified fair trade, because there is no domestic, so U.S. certification for fair trade items. There's things that are sustainably bought or responsibly bought, but they're not a certified fair trade thing. But we buy from an organization called the Women's Bean Project out of Denver, Colorado, and they make spice mixes and soup mixes and popcorns and candies, and they have these really lovely yogurt-covered blueberries that are very nice. And the work they do is employing chronically underemployed women. Many times it's women coming out of treatment or incarceration, and they work for the Women's Bean Project in all capacities. So they're in production and design and marketing and sales. And so these women are getting real skills to help bolster their confidence to be able to go into a workforce, but also to train them to go into a workforce.
This is an American-based company helping Americans.
Yep.
Oh, nice.
And so we carry it because it fits within our mission. And their products are unique. They're not a thing that we can get from somewhere else, fair trade. And the mission is in line with what we do. They just do it domestically.
Well, one of the things that I'm sure you must still do it at Worldly Goods is your employees or the people who are in the shop are a lot of them volunteers, aren't they?
Yeah, that's true. We have just a handful of paid staff. There's me and two other people who are part-time. And the rest of the time, the store is staffed by volunteers. So we have it's a small team right now, and they're there often. So we'll have a volunteer at the store during your sale, two different volunteers. But they, in general right now, are retired folk who want to do good things with their time. Many of them volunteer lots of other places, right, at Ryman Gardens or the library or here or wherever. But, yes, mostly our store is staffed by volunteers.
Oh, that's pretty impressive. In fact, the whole concept is very impressive. I knew Holly Burkhalter, who I remember when Worldly Goods was started and how excited she was. It wasn't a new location on Main Street. It was in Main Street down below. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what's there now.
It was under Roy's TV.
Yes.
If that is still Roy's TV, I'm not sure.
Roy's TV?
Yep.
Okay, I've lived here like 20 plus years, but I don't know where Roy's TV is.
And then there a computer.
You know, you can tell your length and time of living in Ames and in Iowa by the businesses that have been in the location.
Sure. Yes.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Though there was a computer store that took over that business after Worldly Goods moved up on Main Street.
Sure.
The more commercial part of Main Street.
Yep. And I'm not exactly sure what year we moved into that building, but it's been at least the last 25. And because we just entered our 33rd fiscal year. So we are a nonprofit. We're run by a board of directors, and I'm the director of that nonprofit. So I report to the board, but spend my days in Worldly Goods making sure that we're doing all the things we say we're doing and everything is running normally. And now that we're into our holiday season, it's really the most exciting time for us to be there.
Well, it is because there's so many. I mean, a lot of people, you know, basically don't do much gift shopping until Christmas.
Yeah. But, and I know since Myra has been leader over there, she's changed the footprint. So if you haven't been into Worldly Goods in a while – and you haven't stepped inside, it's the same building, but it looks different. I like the way that you have it all set up. You draw me into the back because that's where the chocolate is.
Sure. That's a little bit by design. Much of the change in the way the room feels and how it's a little – there's more elbow room. And there's room if you have any mobility aid, if you have a walker or you have a stroller with a child. There's room for you to get in through our store, which was the goal. And that was achieved mostly by just letting the staff and volunteers that had been there do some things. They, you know, had all these ideas, and I was new. So I said, great, let's try it out. And it's worked out really well.
Excellent. So that's going to start at what time?
4 p.m. tomorrow.
And that's Thursday.
Yes.
Excellent. And it goes till
7 p.m.
So 4 to 7. So there's a small window of 3 hours to get all your Christmas shopping done. No pressure, folks. No pressure whatsoever.
Also, Christmas ornaments. If you,
oh, my. Oh, yes. So many. If you haven't been in yet this season, we have so many ornaments. Yes. You really should get in.
That's, you know, really a personal favorite of mine, where to get your Christmas ornaments.
Absolutely.
If you want to. Perhaps one or two new ones.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Myra.
Yeah, thanks so much. I appreciate it, ladies.
Well. And tomorrow night at Worldly Goods, 4 to 7.
I'll be there.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I've been your host for today, Susan Franzen, with lots of help from Cynthia McClure. Other voices you heard were Leanne Harder, Bill Youngklass, Michaela Thompson, Kara Spooner, and Cynthia McClure. Today's show will be rebroadcast at noon. At 7 p.m., you can hear Michaela Thompson live on the air or come in to 410 Douglas to be part of the studio audience. You can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. Got that? There you will also find information about our guests, along with relevant links to today's stories. Local Talk was engineered by Cynthia McClure. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was Lucky by Michaela Thompson and Harlem Strut by the Lovestruck Balladeers
and Help by John Lennon and Paul McCartney, as sung by Paul Nelson and the Pool Hall Waltz Band.
Local Talk is a workshop as well as a show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, we'll train you. Contact us at 515-292-2878. That's 515-292-2878. Or just drop by to see us. You can contact us through our website, khoifm.org. That's also what you need to know to contact us if you decide to become a member or renew your membership today. Or if you have been a member, thank you. You can just stop by with a check. Just look for the yellow donate button or the become member button. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thank you for listening and see you again on the radio.
Funding for KHOI is provided in part by Iowa State Center, presenting Ailey 2 at C.Y. Stevens, merging the spirit and energy of young dance talent with the passion and creative vision of emerging choreographers. November 13th at 7:30 p.m. More information can be found at center@iastate.edu.